You're listening to Radio Diaries. This is Joe, and I have some exciting news from the Radiotopia family. Ear Hustle is back with a new season. Hosts Nigel Poor and Earlonne Woods are bringing you unique, surprising stories from four California prisons. This season, they have some truly interesting perspectives. You'll hear from people who are so comfortable in prison that they no longer want to be free. And you'll hear from mothers of inmates about the complicated reality of having adult children in prison. The show is full of candid interviews and thought-provoking conversations, and it just keeps getting better. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts and at earhustlesq.com. This episode of Radio Diaries is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiotopia.
From PRX's Radiotopia, this is Radio Diaries. I'm Joe Richman. This summer, videos of Black people killed by police officers have sparked outrage and protests across the country. 65 years ago, it was a photograph that shocked the nation. The image of 14-year-old Emmett Till. Till had traveled from Chicago to the Mississippi Delta to visit family when he was kidnapped, horribly beaten, and killed by white men after allegedly flirting with a white woman. His body was later found in the Tallahatchie River. Emmett Till's death became a media sensation, and today it's considered the spark that ignited the civil rights movement. But for every Emmett Till, there are others whose names have been forgotten. One of them was a Black gas station attendant who lived just a few miles from where Till was killed. Today, the little-known story of Clinton Melton.
My name is Dolores Melton Gresham. I'm the daughter of Clinton Melton in Beulah Melton.
My name is Darcy White, Jr. I'm 86 years old. I am Beulah's nephew.
Growing up, the house that we lived in, it was like on a little bayou, like it was always a happy home. My mom, she was a beautiful woman. Her nickname was Pretty Mama. This is what everybody called
her. Clinton Melton was what you call a good man. He worked hard, took care of his family. He was, you know, well-respected by all of the Black people that knew him, and the white people that came in contact with him, they liked him also.
My dad worked at a service station. He pumped gas, fixed flats. We used to stand and wait for him to come home. And, you know, even though we couldn't tell time, we knew what time he's supposed to be coming home.
Glendora, Mississippi was a little small plantation town, just a little whistle stop on Highway 49. You know, at that time, you didn't have any protection as far as the laws were concerned. It could just happen any time. You could be pulled over by highway patrolman if you were driving a car and be abused. Any old white person could, you know, start trouble and no one would interfere. I guess you felt like a rabbit in the forest, really, what you felt like. because you didn't have nobody to run to.
This is W.F. Minor, Times-Picayune, Jackson, Mississippi. The kidnapping of Emmett Till, the 14-year-old who disappeared on August 28th.
I was 20 years old when Emmett Till was killed. You know, it was the news of the day.
Two white men.
The kids at school would talk about Emmett Till and how they had thrown his body into the river. I remember being afraid to go to sleep at night because some white people might come in and do the same thing to my brothers.
The brutal lynching of Emmett Till demands prosecution of all persons for this heinous crime.
Emmett Till wasn't the only racially motivated murder that took place in the summer of 1955 in Mississippi. But Emmett was the perfect poster child. My name is Keith Beauchamp, and I made the documentary The Untold Story of Emmett Louis Till. After the Till murder trial, You have two men who was involved with the murder of Emmett Till, Roy Bryant and J.W. Milam, and they are acquitted of all the charges by an all-white, all-male jury. And then they get to stand in front of the cameras and smoke cigars and so on. They would get off scot-free.
My name is Dave Tell, and I'm the author of Remembering Emmett Till. The acquittal fueled this environment, this sense that violence against Black Americans would never be punished.
Something was bound to happen again. And 3 months later, just a few miles away, a 34-year-old gin operator drove to a gas station in Glendora, Mississippi.
On that day, Elmer Kimball was driving the car of his good friend, J.W. Milam, one of the confessed murderers of Emmett Till.
They were friends, you know. They would hang out together, the Kimballs and the Milams. I guess they'd be drinking beer. So it was late in the afternoon near closing time when Kimball parked the car near the gasoline pump. Clinton approached him, and they told him to put the gasoline in.
So my dad filled the car up with gas, and then when he had finished, he told me, that, you know, okay, you're finished. And he said, no, I didn't tell you to fill it up. I want $2 worth. And my dad told him, he said, I distinctly heard you say you wanted a fill up.
That's when the dispute came. They said he didn't put the right amount in there. So he told him again, said, well, I put it in there what you told me.
And he told my father, well, don't be here when I get back. And so when he told him that, the service station owner told my father, Clinton, just go home, you know.
Clinton started putting some fuel in his car so he could go home. And before he finished, they returned.
When he came back with the gun, he shot in the car. From what I was told, he had a bullet hole in his hand and a bullet through the head. I remember it was a rainy night, and we were actually in bed. My mother, she just came in, she was crying, and she was just came and hugged each one of us, you know, and told us that your dad won't be coming back home. I remember asking her why, and she said, you got shot. Your dad is dead.
I'm Beulah Milton, the wife of Clinton Milton. I have suffered a great loss, the loss of my husband, from myself and my four kids. Course,
the news cameras came now, and they had an interview with my mom.
We had great plans for Christmas. We had planned to get a tricycle for Vivian and a dining room set for Dolores.
That's her voice.
A basketball for Clinton Jr.
I'd like to hear her voice.
Now how will I make this task by myself without some help from somebody?
Megger Evers, who was a field secretary of the NAACP at that time, wanted to bring national awareness to the Clinton Milton case, but Beulah felt that it could be dangerous and they could receive backlash.
She had lost her husband and she had these four children. You know, she didn't have no one to really depend on. So I'm sure that, you know, she was heartbroken. And I guess she was confused, too.
So the trial was set for March 1956. But just before then, days before the trial happened, Beulah Milton was driving, and her car ended up in the Black Bayou River.
She had her children in the car with her when she made a wrong turn and went out in the water.
My brother was 3 years old and I was five. We are in the car. The car is upside down. You know, you can feel the water just coming in. And my brother told me, he said, water getting in my face. And so I pulled him close up to me and I was feeling around because I was actually trying to open the door. But, you know, if you're upside down, everything is not in place. So I'm trying to feel the knob. And I felt my mom, but she wouldn't answer me. We didn't know how to swim. I was scared that we were going to drown. Finally, I heard my uncle and this other man come along, and he got us out. And I remember them taking my mom out, and she wasn't moving.
Headline, widow drowns as trial opens. A widow who was set to attend the trial of a white man accused of gunning down her husband drowned under mysterious circumstances last week. Two of Miss Melton's children, Dolores and Clinton Jr., were rescued without serious injury.
I was told later that we had been forced off the road, but they never did say who or what, but they were thinking that it was because my mom is going to attend the trial and somebody didn't want her there. Was that accident or were we forced off of the road or what? I don't think nobody really investigated to see what actually happened to her. I would like to know.
When the Clinton-Melton trial began, it opened in the same courthouse where Till's murderers were tried just 5 or 6 months before. The same sheriff was on hand, the same lawyers were defending the defendants.
But maybe one of the most interesting connections was something that was not known at the time, that Elmer Kimball was an accomplice to the murder of Emmett Till. We now know Kimball was involved with both murders.
Kimball was also a manager at the Glendora Cotton Gin, where the Till murderers stole the fan that held Till's body in the river. But in both cases, the juries ignored evidence and there was a unanimous verdict, not guilty.
Well, it was more or less a mockery, I understand. It wasn't a really serious trial. They just went through the motion and did what white people would do during that period of time, a miscarriage of justice.
How could they sit there and know that this man had killed another human being and they still find him not guilty? I really don't like to say this because God moved that from my heart, but I had in my mind at that time that every white person I saw, that I would just like to just shoot them, let them see what it felt like. After my mom and dad died, my aunt, she adopted all four of us, and she had three children at home. My relatives on my dad's side, they wanted to split us up, and she said no, because we didn't want to be separated. We used to get together, and we often talked about that, what it would be like, you know, if our mom and dad was living. At times, I could actually picture the house where we lived in and everything that was in it. The bed, I remember the big heater that sat in the middle of the floor, and the kitchen table. I remember she had some red curtains at one of the windows. I remember that. At that age, you don't think you need these memories.
Dolores Melton Gresham, the daughter of Clinton and Beulah Melton. Today, Clinton Melton's name is engraved at the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama, honoring victims of lynching in the United States. This story was produced by me, Joe Richman, with help from Sarah Kate Kramer and Nellie Gillis. It was edited by Deborah George and Ben Shapiro. Special thanks to Dolores Melton, Dorsey White, journalist Aaron Hayes, filmmaker Keith Beauchamp, and historians Dave Tell, Carlos Hill, and Alex Lichtenstein. Radio Diaries is part of Radiotopia, a listener-supported network from PRX. I'm Joe Richman. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.